I guess if you could briefly tell us and our listeners what's being discussed today, what's the state of healthcare in Ontario look like right now?
Well, we have a scenario where there's a serious push for privatization. It is like this post-pandemic. I think it's sort of related to like a larger global corporate coup going on all around the world. But it's specifically here in Ontario, we're seeing the conservative government replicating what the Harris government perpetrated back, 20, 25 years ago with their, what they call it at that time, a common sense revolution. And at this point, Doug Ford, I think, is using a similar playbook. And it's up to us, I think, as users of the healthcare system, as workers, as patients, as supporters, to basically stand up and say, like, we're not going to tolerate our system being sold for the sake of corporate profits.
And this panel comes after you did that article where you personally worked as a cleaner at the Civic Hospital and you reported on conditions detailing abuses, misconduct, and neglect. And that was published just in May. So what led to that decision?
Yes, it was published in The Leveler on May 1st, May Day, Workers' Day. At the beginning of 2022, we were experiencing the Omicron variant at the hospital, and it was a really, really heavy time. And the areas where I was working in the hospital, I was just seeing a lot of stuff, and I got pretty disillusioned. And I actually initially took my concerns to, actually went and spoke to Joel Harden about it, and I spoke to a couple of other people about it who are politically well connected, and they basically all told me the same thing, like, oh, you got to work through the union, oh, you got to work through the channels. And I thought, like, well, I mean, sure, like, it's great that there's a union, but it's a very bureaucratic union, and it's not an activist union, it's not a militant union, it's not going to really challenge the system. It's designed to keep workers at their stations, so to speak. The more I thought about it, the more I realized that I could use my journalism skills and experience to sort of craft a narrative that would include the kind of information that has just not gotten out to the public about real workers in the hospital. There's always a narrative about doctors and about doctor shortages and about nurses being angry and upset. That's the narrative. And there's never any talk about the cleaners and the transporters, the porters, the supply services folks, like everybody who goes into that place together, the clerks, the PCAs, patient care assistants. You know, there's so many folks that go into putting that operation together. So we're in a situation where folks like myself, we've been out of a contract since September of 2021, and the hospitals are bargaining in bad faith. They're taking advantage of Doug Ford's policies. They're taking advantage of his intransigence and his refusal, basically, to deal with anything. So they're aping the provincial government's actions and sensibilities. It's basically corporatism, which I view as a form of, that enmeshing, as Mussolini was quoted to say, that enmeshing of corporate interests and government, which, as some people would like to say, was Mussolini's definition of fascism. So we have a situation where the hospital is under the control of somebody who has never worked as a patient care person in any form or another. The CEO is a businessman, for lack of a better term, a corporatist, who is in there to bring privatization to the system. They want to bring in, this is a test subject here in Ottawa, to force privatization into the Ottawa hospital, and they'll be doing that across the province in the years to come. So I think that the onus is on us here in Ottawa to really push hard to stop the privatization of the healthcare system here, which will have a knock-on effect for helping other communities stop the privatization of their institutions.
Yeah, when I'm reading about the justifications that people like Doug Ford or Cameron Love have for privatization, they usually come back to saying that this will help healthcare workers in the long term. And what do you have to say to that?
They're lying. They're straight up lying. They know it, because the thing is that they know what they're doing doesn't help workers because it's hurting us. Like, the union will talk about how they have told the employer over and over and over again about all these issues, and the employer just refuses to listen. You know, I myself made multiple complaints about supervisors, all these issues around abusive supervisors. They just don't care. They literally don't care. They know and they don't care. They know workers are getting hurt and they don't care. They push forward because the point of their existence is not to make a functioning hospital. It's to make a dysfunctioning hospital. It's to destroy the system as it is so they can rebuild it. They want to destroy the system so that they can build privatization out of the shell of it. And they're allowing the Civic to completely collapse. And one of the reasons for that is they're putting all of their money and our money too, because they haven't been paying us, into the new hospital. They're directing all the finances into the new hospital and the renovation of Cameron Love's office. And starving the rest of the hospital, all three campuses, starving them of the finances that they need. They have a long-term plan that basically is like a cabal of corporate vampires, and we need to resist. One of the main reasons why this happens is that they are in the dark. They exist in the dark, and people aren't paying attention. We're at this point now where our healthcare system is collapsing, so people are being forced to pay attention.
For people who aren't aware, what do you mean, like, not getting paid?
Well, we've been without a contract since September 21. That's support service workers, KP 4000, clerks, patient care assistants, and support service workers like myself, cleaners and other transporters and food services and so on. So the hospital has been trying to keep us to 0.98% pay raise. They wanted to give us less. They offered us less than Doug Ford's mandated 1%, which is like a straight up slap in the face. You know, this is the bare minimum we can get, so we're going to give you less. Like, that's just obviously anti-worker. So that's where the basis comes from, where they don't want to pay us. But then it's also in these manipulations of the way that they hire and bring on full-time and part-time jobs. Like, for example, when you look at the number of full-time and part-time jobs listed in the housekeeping department that I used to work at, you will find that the numbers don't match the numbers of people who are on the schedule. You'll see by looking at those numbers that there is a shortage of full-time and part-time positions being filled, and they're being filled by casuals on purpose. So there's about double the number of casual workers, and the administration is using casual workers to fill positions that should be full-time and part-time with benefits. The hospital doesn't want to do that. So the hospital is absolutely manipulating and exploiting the workers and immiserating our conditions. You know, I think it suits them for the hospital to collapse. It suits them for things to get worse for us because they obviously don't care. You know, they are funding themselves. They're giving themselves massive raises. In one case, one of the executives got, you know, a 94% raise during the pandemic. Cameron Love himself got more than 60% in raise in the last several years. And they want us as workers to get 0.98% plus make concessions, as in agreeing to more egregious terms within our workplaces, working more hours, taking on more responsibilities, and so on and so forth. So they want us to work more, and they want us to get paid less. So it's just crazy. We just can't tolerate that.
It's a lot of those anti-worker conditions, like you said. And after witnessing all of them firsthand, you decide to blow the whistle. Was that a hard decision to make?
It took me more than a year from the point at which I made the decision to start the work to the time when I was ready to approach some folks that I knew at the Leveler. And they encouraged me. They saw the public interest in what I was doing. And that process, I got to say, took several months. And it was really actually quite wonderful. I was fortunate enough to start writing when I was really young, and the experience that I had at the Leveler was one of my best experiences of being edited, and the back and forth that I had with the editor was really appropriate, because there were times when I was, you know, being a little bit hot-headed perhaps in my rhetoric, and, you know, he would insist that I tone it down, or, you know, he was really good about questioning me, and so he really pushed me really hard, and so I was really pleased with the final result. And one of the things that I really value is that across the board and across all campuses, I've heard the most incredible words of support and agreement and approval and appreciation from my fellow workers. And that just means everything to me. Like, in this situation where, you know, I have thousands and thousands of coworkers, I met hundreds of them. I'm a pretty gregarious person. I'm always chatting and trying to help out in whatever way I could in the hospital. And so to hear back and then to see people and to be greeted, you know, with warmth and gratitude, like, that has really, really meant the world to me.
I was, yeah, curious about the response to that, and I'm happy to hear that there's been a lot of positivity. Have you found that that's the majority of the response?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've heard very little negative. I mean, the only really negative response I've had is from the hospital administration. But mostly, like, one of the best things that I've heard from people, especially those folks who've been around at the hospital for many, 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 many years, when they turn around and they say, "Everything you said was true." Ha! like, wow, like... Like, it's really, it gets me emotional to think about, like, how people have felt. I think people have felt heard, and that's been really meaningful. And I got a lot of response from the union sort of leadership, because I've been dealing with them quite a bit. And so I got a lot of feedback from them, and they told me about what they were hearing from the membership. And I think it really helped to crystallize a kind of voice for a lot of workers. Now, the question is, though, it's not translated into any kind of form of betterment for the situation that we're in. I mean, that's going to require more direct action, and we're setting up all campuses are going to be picketed at least once or twice a week. And so, you know, I think that's great. You know, we definitely need to keep the pressure up, and then we need the public to basically tell the hospital to give us better working conditions.
So you dedicated the expose to those fellow workers and the scrubs as well, the people who you're hearing from now saying that was spot on, that representation, that is something that they've experienced as well. In regard to moving forward, what is actually the steps that need to be taken to make sure that they have adequate working conditions?
Well, there's going to be a much larger fight to be had because the hospital is just ignoring us. I think they feel they're in a really strong position, although they're actually in a very weak position. They're very vulnerable. And what they're vulnerable to is public pressure. This is what's so important. We are not in a position to strike. You know, I'm wearing, you can't see it, but I'm wearing a sticker about if we could strike, we would. And we're not allowed to. You know, I think there are wildcats happening all around the world. And there are ways that nurses can wildcat. I mean, I would have conversations with nurses sometimes to be like, just stop using the computer. Like, you know, you're not leaving the bedside. You're just refusing to chart everything and put it into the computer. Just take pieces of paper. I mean, if all the nurses were prepared to do that, within a couple of days, the hospital would cave. And with support service workers, we can't really do that. I've thought and thought and thought about it as cleaners. We can't really work to rule in the same kind of way. What we really need is public pressure. And again, like this whole thing about how they function in the darkness, they benefit from the lack of oversight, the lack of public oversight. There's almost no public scrutiny. You know, I mean, everything is about, you know, slapping each other's back and getting the paycheck for these administrators and for everyone who's involved in the money side of things and the administrative side of things. And for the people who wear the scuff shoes and the scrubs, we're just getting completely screwed. Our situation is collapsing. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what it's going to take next. We definitely need to up the ante in terms of workers rising up, but what the system can tolerate, it's a lot, actually, as we've proven over pandemics. So we'll see what happens.
Right. And so for that support system to help these workers rise up, we need that accountability and we need that public pressure to get there. So if there's one thing that you can say to the public right now, what would that be?
If that level of public pressure is there, not only can we get a better contract for QP4000 workers, but I actually argue we could stop the privatization of the hospitals. We can stop that by calling on the people of Ottawa to call for the resignation of Cameron Love. I really worry that history is rhyming right now when it comes to Ontario, and we need to change the tune.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time with me today.
Thank you.